Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on biodiesel, alternative energy sources, when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? Well, that's why my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Well, listen to James Nielsen. Now, he's a law professor at the Hastings Law School, a law school teacher. Here's what he had to say about our lawyers. Quote, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And he said it's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real, honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed, and a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel, and a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, it is a cruel hoax. Now, that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, for more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative, best of all, it's free. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, before we get into alternative energy sources, biodiesel and others, I got a letter in here. It says, Dear George, you're mispronouncing Tavistock as Travistock. There's no R in the word. All right, Chris, I stand corrected. You're right. And then he goes on to say, 12 times 12 is 144, not 134. All right, Chris, if I said 12 times 12 is 144, you got me again. He says, keep up the good work. Great series on mind control. I plan on getting the book and sharing it with some teacher friends. All right, Chris, thank you very much for the correction. I don't mind being corrected. Once in a while, I make a mistake. That's the second time in my last 5 years. Listen to this letter. This is a real kicker here. It says, Dear Jimmy, hope all is well with you in Iraq. We're all so proud of you for going over there to fight for our freedom. A lot has happened since you left. Our home has been taken by the IRS for back taxes that we owed, and then the family business was condemned by the city, so they could build a new football stadium. Mom was arrested for carrying a gun in her purse, and your brother's in prison for smoking a joint. At least your sister's okay, although she has to go to court next week for not wearing her seatbelt. So we wish you were here to help pay for all of the legal fees, but just knowing that you're over there fighting for the liberties that we all cherish so much makes it all worthwhile. Love, Dad. You know, those Iraqis over there don't have gun control, and they're all armed. We Americans over here went over to help those guys, and we're the guys with the gun control. That's two. Then I got a call here today from a fellow who said that he'd called Franklin Sanders, and Franklin Sanders didn't have any good words for me. Well, that's all right. When you hear me quote from or read from some book, periodical, or news article, just because I agree with somebody in his position doesn't mean that that person agrees with me or my positions, and that's what the problem is there. Franklin Sanders is a nice guy. I like him. He may not like me, but that's his problem in life, not mine. But the complaint that this student had when he called was that Sanders had advised him that he should not take physical possession of the gold, but rather that he should leave it in an account. Well, you can do whatever you want. You know, you people out there are big boys and girls. I recommend physical possession. I don't care if the Pope recommends Federal Reserve notes and bank accounts. I don't. I mean, you can figure it out for yourself. Would you rather have physical possession of the gold in your own grubby fist, or would you rather have somebody else holding it for you? It's a choice that you make in life, not me. Personally, I'm going to hold my gold, and I don't care whether I buy it from Sanders or Batten or who I buy it from. When I buy it, I'm going to have physical possession of it, and that's what I recommend. So if somebody that I read to you from over the air, or there's a story that you hear, gives you some other kind of advice, just remember that not everybody that I quote or cite or read from or talk about would necessarily agree with me. In fact, most people don't. That's why I put a disclaimer on. So I always tell you that these politically incorrect opinions, beliefs, and comments and views and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the staff, or the management of the network or of this radio station, or of anybody that I may be doing a news article on. All right, so much for that. Now, I got a letter in here on alternative energy sources with specificity on a thing called biodiesel. Now, I'd never heard of biodiesel until this guy wrote me a letter. In fact, I got two letters. The first letter that I received here back about August the 29th comes from Lyle. He says, I just finished listening to your show on renewable energy. When I was young in southern Minnesota, I had a lot of farmers out there had wind generators to furnish electricity before the REA came in with cheap power. The generators were 32 volts, but furnished enough to power the farm. Well, in the 1960s, farmers were starting to use alcohol in their tractors produced from the crops grown on the farm. Soon all the tractors came out with diesel engines. Alcohol, of course, was out. Well, in the 1970s, I was at a demonstration in North Dakota on a machine that cold-pressed sunflower oil. And this oil was filtered with no other processing and then was ran in a farm tractor under heavy use with only 5% loss in power. It was estimated that 10 acres grew enough fuel to run a 500-acre farm. The machine was made in Japan but was outlawed in the United States. Now, it is said that the oil has to be refined. I think our politicians are lining their pockets. I enjoy your shows, but I can only get them in the archives. Well, that's about correct, unless you happen to live in an area where one of these 29 radio stations are located. You'll have to get our program off the archives. That's why we archive all of our programs, and of course they're archived by title and date so that you can go back either with a date and find it or with a title so that you can find it alphabetically. Well, I received a second letter, and the second letter said, why don't you do a story on biodiesel? So I'd never heard the term before, so I said, okay. So we went out and we got all the information we could off of the internet here dealing with ethanol and biodiesel and alternative energy. And so before I get into that, I'll tell you a little story here. I've got a farm and we use about $300 to $400 a month worth of electricity here on the farm. And I had a student come in here and he builds houses out in Utah. He's a tile setter by trade, but he also built a house every once in a while. And he put in a battery system that's operated on solar cells. So I got the prices of it the other day, and it came in at a whopping $40,000 for the hardware to get enough power in here to run my farm. Now, that would amortize out in about 10 years' time. And so economically, I think it's feasible to do. And what this guy is telling me the story of here is that back in the 30s, you know, the rural people that wanted electricity had to generate their own, either from wind power or from a diesel generator or something on that order. A second story I heard was Dr. Crane down in West Texas. When he was a kid, they said that they had a diesel generator. And they would start the generator in the morning at 6 o'clock, milk the cows, and do the farm work until 10. So they ran it 8 hours a day, 4 hours in the morning and 4 hours at night. So they ran it from 6 o'clock till 10 o'clock at night and 6 o'clock till 10 o'clock in the morning. And when Mom did the washing, she had to do the washing and do her housework and things like that if she had anything to do in those 8 hours. And if you had any welding to do or something like that, you could start the generator up at any time, do some welding if you had some heavy electrical use. But primarily, they got by on 8 hours a day. So if push comes to shove, I mean, that's where reality is located, isn't it? When push comes to shove and you don't have the money to buy power, assuming that you've still got a house to live in, you may have to come up with a different plan. So I'm thinking about this alternative energy myself, and it looks like it might be economically viable. If you've got wind, that's probably a better way to go. And if you've got plenty of sunlight down in the southwest, here we have about 5 hours of sunlight a day, and our analysis tells us that alternative energy is to a point where it has to double. For instance, if I'm going to spend $40,000, it's got to recover itself in 10 years, and the useful life of this power plant's about 20, so it would double in about 20 years. And that makes it economically viable. You spend a dollar and you make two. Now, that might not be true everywhere, so you'll have to do your own analysis, but when we talk about biodiesel and alternative energy, the concept that is being bandied about by Ralph Nader and others is that we don't need Saudi oil, and we don't need all of these hydropower plants and dams. Why, we can open up all the rivers, tear down all the dams, And we can just eliminate all this Saudi oil and these oil imports, and we can just do it right here in the United States ourselves with wind and solar and 15 other alternative energy sources. Well, I think you're going to be surprised at the numbers when we get into how much gasoline do we use and how much does our economy use and where is the oil in the world and can we wean ourselves from oil and so on down the line. And of course, all of that's possible. You know, 100 years ago in 1900 and 1904, we didn't use all this oil and natural gas. But we didn't have an economy the size that we have. We didn't have 300 million people in the country, and we didn't have a lifestyle and a standard of living the way we're living today. So if Americans get to the point where they're willing to give up their standard of living and they're willing to give up the luxuries that we've all become used to and accustomed to, well, then sure, we can do it ourselves, and we can do it right here. Well, we got to take a break here, and we'll be back after the break to take on biodiesel, alternative energy sources, and can we make it without Saudi oil when we come back right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Tonight's report, biodiesel. Well, the environmental benefits of biodiesel comes from the National Biodiesel Board. In 2000, biodiesel became the only alternative fuel in the country to have successfully completed the EPA-required Tier 1 and Tier 2 health effects testing under the Clean Air Act. These independent tests conclusively demonstrated biodiesel's significant reduction of virtually all regulated emissions and showed biodiesel does not pose a threat to human health. Biodiesel contains no sulfur or aromatics, and use of biodiesel in a conventional diesel engine results in a substantial reduction of unburned hydrocarbons, carbon monoxide, and particulate matter. A U.S. Department of Energy study showed that the production and use of biodiesel compared to petroleum diesel resulted in a 78% reduction in carbon dioxide emissions. Moreover, biodiesel has a positive energy balance. For every unit of energy needed to produce a gallon of biodiesel, 3.24 units of energy are gained. Energy security benefits are these. With agricultural commodity prices approaching record lows and petroleum prices approaching record highs, it is clear that more can be done to utilize domestic surpluses of vegetable oils while enhancing our energy security, because biodiesel can be manufactured using existing industrial production and production capacity and used with conventional equipment. It provides substantial opportunity for immediately addressing our energy security issues. If the true cost of using foreign oil were imposed on the price of imported fuel, renewable fuels such as biodiesel probably would be the most viable option. For instance, in 1976, it was estimated that the military costs of securing foreign oil was $57 billion a year. Foreign tax credits accounted for another $4 billion annually, and environmental costs were estimated at $45 a barrel. For every $1 billion spent on foreign oil, America lost 25,000 jobs. The economic benefits, increased utilization of renewable biofuels results in significant microeconomic benefits in both the urban and rural sections and the balance of trade. A study completed in 2001 by the U.S. Department of Agriculture found that an average annual increase of the equivalent of 200 million gallons of soy-based biodiesel and demand would boost total crop cash receipts by $5.2 billion cumulatively year by year by the year 2010, resulting in an average net farm income increase of $300 million per year. The price for a bushel of soybeans would increase by an average 17 cents annually during the 10-year period. In addition to being a domestically produced renewable alternative fuel for diesel engines, biodiesel has positive performance attributes such as increased cetane, high fuel lubricity, and high oxygen content, which may make it a preferred blending stock with future ultra-clean diesel. And the quality benefits. Biodiesel is registered as a fuel and fuel additive with the EPA and meets clean diesel standards established by the California Air Resources Board. B100, 100% biodiesel, has been designated as an alternative fuel by the U.S. Department of Energy and the U.S. Department of Transportation. Moreover, in December 2001, the American Society of Testing and Materials approved a specification, D6551, for biodiesel fuel. This development was crucial in standardizing fuel quality for biodiesel in the U.S. market. The National Biodiesel Board, the trade association for the biodiesel industry, has formed the National Biodiesel Accreditation Commission to audit fuel producers and marketers in order to enforce fuel quality standards in the United States. The NBAC issues a certified biodiesel marketer a seal of approval for biodiesel marketers that have met all of the requirements of fuel accreditation audits. This seal of approval will provide added assurance to customers as well as engine manufacturers that the biodiesel marketed by these companies meets the ASTM standards for biodiesel and that the fuel supplier will stand behind his products. And then the effective November 1998, Congress approved the use of biodiesel as an Energy Policy Act. It's called the EP Act Compliance Strategy. The legislation allows EP Act covered fleets, that is federal, state, and public utility fleets, to meet their alternative fuel vehicle purchase requirements simply by buying 450 gallons of pure biodiesel and burning it in new or existing diesel vehicles in at least a 20% blend with diesel fuel. The Congressional Budget Office and the U.S. Department of Agriculture have confirmed that the biodiesel option is the least cost alternative fuel option for meeting the federal government's EP Act compliance requirements. Because it works with existing diesel engines, biodiesel offers an immediate and seamless way to transition existing diesel vehicles into a cleaner burning fleet. All right, now that comes, remember, from the Biodiesel Board, so they've got a pretty good report on their own product. Now, here's the official site of the National Biodiesel Board, Biodiesel. Here's another article. Biodiesel is the name of a clean burning alternative fuel produced from domestic renewable resources. Biodiesel contains no petroleum, but it can be blended at any level with petroleum diesel to create a biodiesel blend, and it can be used in compression, ignited, or ignition diesel engines with little or no modifications. Biodiesel is simple to use, biodegradable, non-toxic, and essentially free of sulfur and aromatics. How is biodiesel made? Well, biodiesel is made through a chemical process called transesterification, whereby the glycerin is separated from the fat or vegetable oil. The process leaves behind two products, methyl esters, the chemical name for biodiesel, and glycerin, a valuable byproduct usually sold to be used in soap and other like products. Is biodiesel the same thing as raw vegetable oil? No, no it isn't. Fuel grade biodiesel must be produced to strict industry specifications, ASTM D6751, in order to ensure proper performance. Well, let me pause right there. Why is it that we have to have a government designation of ASTM D6751? Remember the letter that I read to you at the beginning of this program? I received a letter from a fellow, and he said, hey, listen, up in North Dakota, I was present when they were taking this oil, filtered it, and then ran tractors on it. Well, it's like putting a date on a can. The expiration date on the can is a marketing tool. It's for the purposes of making money. And the reason that we want to have a refined product, I mean, it isn't satisfactory that we just take sunflower, squeeze the oil out, filter it, and then put it in the tank of a tractor and go out and start plowing. I mean, we can't have that. That's too cheap. That's too simple. That's too logical. We have to take this to the government and get a designation made so that anybody that's trying to sell this stuff has to meet these specifications. I don't know what these specifications are. We do the same thing with gasoline and ethanol and cans. And for instance, we have a drive here in Ozark County. Food drive around Thanksgiving time, you know, for poor people, Thanksgiving and Christmas. Well, for years and years, I used to give quite a bit of food, you know, canned food, this and canned food, that. And one year, this is a few years back now, but one year they said, well, unless the food that you donate, Mr. Gordon, is USDA approved, that is, you can't have any home canned foods. You can't have any canned foods that are out of date. And these foods have to be accompanied with a receipt from the grocery store. Why is that? Well, evidently, people like me who were giving food to people and weren't buying the food down here at the local grocery store was costing the grocery store profits. Now, the local grocery stores are all in favor of food drives as long as you're buying the food from them. If you're producing the food yourself, in other words, if I was to give you a live sheep, that's unacceptable. We can't accept that. Okay, well, what if I killed the sheep and butcher it for you? No, that's still unacceptable because it's not USDA approved. Oh, I can kill the sheep and I can eat it. it's good for me, but if I kill the sheep and give it to you, that's bad for you because it's not USDA approved. So I just backed off and said, the people of Ozark County can starve to death in the dark before I will give them any more food. Nothing personal, you know. But if the food that I eat isn't good enough for you, you can go to hell in a handbasket. How's that for charity? And I say the same thing here on this biodiesel. Now, the man that wrote me the letter said, there's no problem here. The Japanese came up with a machine that will take sunflower seeds, crush them, extract the oil. You can filter the oil just to get the sunflower holes out of it so that it doesn't plug up your fuel filter, and stick it in your diesel tractor and go out and farm with it. Now, the U.S. government outlawed that. Said, no, we're not going to have that in the United States. And that's because it gets in the way of Exxon Mobil and Conoco and the other big manufacturers of petroleum products. And you can see their point. I mean, I'm not mad at Town and Country Market. I understand their point. It's just that if you can't take one of my sheep, you can't take two of my chickens, you can't take a turkey, or you can't take the food that I produce on my own farm, and you tell me that it has to be USDA approved so that we can make profit for Town and Country Market, I said, hell with you. You're not hungry. When you get hungry, come back and let me know. Same thing is true here with fuels. You know, you people aren't short of fuel. You don't need biodiesel or anything else, as long as you're sitting here telling me that it's got to meet these certain standards. So I don't want to get in the way of the happiness and success of Texaco and Town and Country Supermarket and the FDA or anybody else. Now, we got to take a break here, so stand by. We'll be back with more on these alternative fuels, biodiesel, when we return. Stand by. All right, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. The school includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, citation, or a complaint. Now, rule number one in pro se litigation is don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and shut up. Now, if you can learn rule one, you can win about 90% of your legal cases. And that's because all of the evidence that's going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And your government is fully capable of making their own case without your help. They don't need any help from you at all. Now, listen to what the courts have to say about keeping quiet in the face of police interrogation, and indeed, in many cases, police intimidation. The first judge put it this way. He said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? That comes from U.S. versus Dickerson. Second judge says, you can and must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment in Belknap versus United States. And the third judge said, the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and the farsighted in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is also available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, just go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about alternative energy. Biodiesel. Well, biodiesel is the only alternative fuel to have fully completed the health effects testing requirements of the 1990 Clean Air Act amendments. Biodiesel that meets ASTM D6751 and is legally registered with the Environmental Protection Agency is a legal motor fuel for sale and distribution. Raw vegetable oil cannot meet biodiesel fuel specifications. It is not registered with the EPA, and it is not a legal motor fuel. Let me see if I've got this straight. If I go out here and I guess it's because it's not being taxed. Isn't that what we're talking about? I mean, if I go out here and I squeeze a bunch of sunflower seeds, get some oil, filter it out, stick it in my diesel pickup, and drive down the street, it's not a legal motor fuel, is it? And that's because it's not being taxed. Hey, the government's got to get in here and tax it, don't they? Now, for entities seeking to adopt a definition of biodiesel for purposes such as federal or state statute, state or national divisions of weights and measures, or for any other purpose, the official definition consistent with other federal and state laws and original equipment manufacturer guidelines is as follows. Biodiesel is defined as monoalkyl esters of long-chain fatty acids derived from vegetable oils or animal fats, which conform to ASTM D6751 specifications for use in diesel engines. Biodiesel refers to the pure fuel before blending with diesel fuel. Biodiesel blends are denoted as BXX with XX representing the percentage of biodiesel contained in the blend. For example, B20 is 20% biodiesel and 80% petroleum diesel. Now let me make another observation here. I've got a student up in Ohio that goes around to the various fast food restaurants. See, they bring in animal fat to fry their French fries. Kentucky Fried Chicken, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's. And if you'll look out behind these buildings, these fast food restaurants, you'll see that they've got a container out there that holds this fat, that holds all this grease. And then there's a truck, you know, you'll see them running around, you know, that pick up this fat. And I don't know what they do with it, but this guy goes around and gets that from these people free, just for hauling it away. They got to pay to dispose of it. He takes it home, filters it, and burns it in his tractors. So I know from one eyewitness, or one fellow that does this, that the fat that you boil your French fries in, once it's filtered, I mean, you got to get the French fry particulate matter out of it, otherwise it plugs up your fuel filters. Once you've got that cleaned out of it, the fuel burns. Now, it doesn't have as many BTUs, it doesn't have as much heat energy as does diesel. I'll give you some numbers here a little later. But it's 90%, and this one guy that wrote to me said it's about 95%. Well, the officials tell us that it's 90% of the power of petroleum diesel, but, you know, it's getting right up there. It's pretty close. A few percentage points less doesn't make that much difference, I would opine. So now the question arises, well, why should I use biodiesel? Well, biodiesel is better for the environment because it's made from renewable resources and has lower emissions compared to petroleum diesel. It's less toxic than table salt and biodegrades as fast as sugar. Since it's made in the USA from renewable resources such as soybeans, its use decreases our dependence on foreign oil and contributes to our own economy. So where do I get biodiesel? Well, biodiesel is available nationwide, and it can be purchased directly from biodiesel producers and marketers, petroleum distributors, or at a handful of public pumps throughout the nation, which in layman's language means that for you and I, it's unavailable. Now, for more information on the general and technical definitions of biodiesel, the distinction between the two, and why these distinctions are important, click here. So you can go to, you know, the web and click on to biodiesel, go to Google or somebody there, and they'll probably take you to the biodiesel, or it's called the official site of the National Biodiesel Board, and see if you can get more information if you'd like to. But now that we've opened up the discussion on biodiesel, and I told you where you can get a free supply to burn in your tractors or diesel pickups, and you get it from Kentucky Fried Chicken or any of these other guys over here that have that tallow, et cetera. Let's take a look at alternative energy sources such as ethanol. Now, you've heard me produce a program or two here on ethanol. Nicholas E. Hollis, Agribusiness Council, the recent smoke screen, that's called Bill H.R. 4545, entitled the Gasoline Price Reduction Act. Well, that sounds good. I mean, we all want gasoline prices reduced. So Congress enacts a law, and they call it the Gasoline Price Reduction Act, introduced by Congressman Roy Blunt of Missouri. That's my man right here. Well, that's Roy Blunt, our congressman, and he has introduced this bill with Mr. Paul Ryan of Wisconsin on June 14th. It offers a unique glimpse into the ethanol hoax. No one can dispute the pain of high gasoline prices, especially as they fall disproportionately on those least able to afford it. All right, gotta stop right there. High gasoline prices. No. Gasoline prices today, adjusted for inflation, are less than they were in 1930. In 1930, the price of gasoline was 17 cents a gallon. Today, it's $2 a gallon. Now, just divide 17 cents into $2. So if you take $2 divided by 0.17, it's 11.76, or about 12 to 1. Now, the purchasing power of the dollar has declined. I guess you're all aware of that. It's called inflation. But it's declined 96.5 cents since 1930. So what cost you 3.5 cents to buy in 1930 now costs you a dollar. And commensurately, you get paid more money. See, in 1930, you were working for a dollar a day or $2 a day, and today you're working for $100 a day. And that $100 a day that you're getting today buys how many gallons of gas compared to how many gallons of gas could you buy in 1930 when you were working for $2 or $3 or $5 a day? So let's give you $5 a day. So if we have $5 divided by 0.17, you could have bought 29 gallons of gas in 1930 with your $5, if that's what you were earning per day. Or about 30 gallons of gas. Today, if you earn $100 a day, which is what, about $12 an hour, $13 an hour, divided by $2, you buy 50 gallons of gas. Not quite double, but about, you know, 40% more. Now, there are quite a few things in our society that are actually cheaper today by a long sight than they were back in the 1930s. For instance, when I was a kid and you went to make a telephone call, like we went to call my uncle Carol, who was in the Air Force in Orlando, Florida, from Eureka, California, it cost $3.42 to make a 3-minute telephone call that you could hardly hear over the telephone. I mean, it was staticky and it was bad connections, and it took 20 minutes to complete the call. I mean, you'd make your call in Eureka, and 20 minutes later, the operator would call you back and say your call is completed, and you got to talk for 3 minutes for $3.42. Well, how much is that a minute? Take $3.42, divide that by three, and that's $1.14 a minute. Now, the last time I got a telephone bill here, we were paying 5 cents a minute for our telephone time. Now, adjust that for inflation. I mean, back in 1943, you know, $3.42 was a, you know, piece of change. My granddad was working for $1.63 an hour, 8 hours a day. So 1.63 times 8 is $13.04 a day in 1943, working at the Northern Redwood Lumber Company. And so when he made a call, you know, $3.42, you know, we're talking about $3 out of 13. I mean, let's just divide that in there by 342. Divides in there 3.81 times, or about four times. You know, we're almost talking about a fourth of a day's pay to make one crummy telephone call. Can you see that? I mean, how would you like to work a fourth of a day? By comparison, today it would be $25 for 3 minutes, and instead it's 15 cents for 3 minutes. Computers are that way, and a whole host of other things are also cheaper today than they were back in the good old days. People like to talk about the good old days. Well, let me share something else with you. Everything else, food, automobiles. I can remember when you could buy a brand new 1955 Ford automobile for $1,600. I don't think 16,000 will touch that car today. So everything else is 10, 15, 20 times higher. The overall net effect, when you factor in all of the gasoline is cheaper and computers are cheaper and telephone calls are cheaper, and you factor that in with automobiles, which are higher, and food, which is higher, and rent, which is higher, and real estate, which is higher, the purchasing power of your money has gone down to where now a nickel in 1930 takes a dollar today to buy what you could have bought in 1930 for a nickel. The demise, the destruction of the American dollar is just about complete. We just haven't quite buried it, but it's just about complete. Now we come along with this ethanol, and now they're telling us that no one can dispute the pain of high gasoline prices, especially as they fall disproportionately on those least able to afford it. Well, boys and girls, gasoline just happens to be one of those things that we can better afford today than food, shelter, and clothing. Stand by. We'll take a break here, and we'll be back with more on biodiesel and alternative energy right after this. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to the webpage. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact discs, so for more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Talking about biodiesel, we're on ethanol. Let's take a look here at ethanol. Therefore, the title of the bill would seem laudable, but a closer reading reveals a false solution to higher gas prices based upon a false premise. The mistitled bill, remember it's called the Gasoline Price Reduction Act. This mistitled bill will do nothing to expose the real culprit behind surging gas prices and may actually add upward price pressure at the pump. This bill would grant the Department of Energy new powers to waive certain provisions of the Clean Air Act of 1990, which in effect require the blending of additives, now those are called oxygenates, to gasoline, with the underlying argument that oxygenates enhance cleaner burning of motor vehicle engines. Additives like ethanol and its main competitor, MTBE, have been used in this legislated niche. Well, about 6 years ago, ethanol proponents focused on purging MTBE out of the additive market. The coveted prize was California's motoring market. MTBE had been found leaking from storage tanks and had in several instances contaminated groundwater. This vulnerability enabled the ethanol forces to fan the fear factor and present its product as an environmentally friendly alternative. This is deceptive hogwash, but California's then Governor Gray Davis bought the idea while simultaneously accepting a $200,000 campaign contribution from, guess who? Archer Daniels Midland Corporation, which just happens to be the nation's largest producer of ethanol. Well, the problem now is simple. The ethanol mob has practically driven MTBE from the marketplace, but it cannot supply enough ethanol to meet the blending requirements in the Northeast states and California because of the transport and other logistical concerns. So it is really a supply and demand dilemma for the ethanol suppliers, and this is a key factor in the current price hikes at the pump. Now, the Blunt-Ryan bill would further obscure this fact. The present new law, which would provide cover for the ethanol juggernaut by further reducing state and local flexibility in resisting the ethanol squeeze on the one hand, and giving the Department of Energy powers to intervene to reduce consumer choices on the other hand. In severe shortage cases, the Department of Energy under the new law might even be able to force ethanol use while studying which fuels to allow. In the smoke of the bill, if enacted, ethanol would get another pass and avoid taking responsibility for the gas price fiasco. All right, now let me just interject this. In the Soviet Union, they practiced a planned economy. That is, a planned economy called a five-year plan. Now, we Americans have adopted the Soviet program. What we're going to do is adopt central planning from Washington to determine what kind of gasoline additive should go into the gasoline in California and Maine, instead of letting the marketplace do it. And that's because if the marketplace does it, well, then we'll have too many emissions and we'll have environmental degradation, and we can't have that now, can we, boys and girls? Well, okay. So get used to paying $2, $2.50, $3 a gallon for gasoline. That's the price that you pay for central planning. If you don't like the marketplace to determine prices, well, then let the government determine the price. There isn't anything that government cannot do half as well for twice as much. Out in California, they're paying nearly $2.50 a gallon. Now, here in the Midwest, where I lived last time I looked, we're paying $1.69 for gas. Don't ask me why the price of gas is so cheap in Ozark County, Missouri. We don't have an oil well within 200 or 300 miles of here. I think Kansas is the closest. I think the closest refinery has got to be in Kansas City or St. Louis. You've got refineries out there in California. You've got oil wells in California. You've got big ports in California to bring in oil from all over the world. You've got to have the cheapest oil, cheapest gasoline in the world in California. And instead, it's the highest price. And that's because you have the most government intervention in your gasoline and in your petroleum market. And the more intervention you have, just like Roy Blunt, you know, the more government intervention that you can get involved into the free marketplace, the higher the prices, the poorer the performance, the worse the product, the greater the expense. Now, the question remains, do the fuel blends required by the amended Clean Air Act really make sense? Or was this complication foisted off on Congress back in 1993 just so that they could create this phony niche for gasoline additives? Well, recent studies suggest that ethanol actually contributes to major smog and other environmental problems in its various stages of the subsidized processing, transportation, distribution, and retailing. Now, notice the term here. The various stages of subsidized processing. You see, this ethanol is an expensive product. It's kind of like food. We Americans want cheap food. And so to get cheap food, we pay a lot of tax subsidies. So if you actually took the subsidies out of food production, you'd find that food prices would be 20% higher than they are. Now, in looking at the price of fuel, actually the government has not intervened in the oil business enough yet to make the price of gasoline equal what it does in Great Britain, where it's $5.76 a gallon. Do you get that? $5.76 a gallon for gasoline in Great Britain. And that's because the British have greater participation with government in the petroleum business than we have in the United States. Now, I say, in order for us to equal Great Britain and $5.76, we've got to have a whole lot more government subsidies, government intervention in the marketplace. We need, in short, more laws in this country. We've got to get away from this free market economy. Let me point something out to you. The price of gasoline nationwide, the last time I saw, was $2.01 a gallon, average, nationwide. 40 cents of that is fuel taxes. So the oil companies are producing oil, and then they're refining it into gasoline, transporting it all over the country, and delivering it to us for $1.60 a gallon. And government adds 40 cents to that, and that's $2 a gallon, and it's only 40% of the price of gasoline in Great Britain. Less than 40%. So, I mean, you know, let's call a spade, and let's grow up and get real. Now, ethanol is making a big step in the right direction to raising prices so that we can, at some point in time, have $5 a gallon gasoline. And I say, let's get after it. So the question arises, how can this fraud continue against growing citizen opposition? Wait a minute. I haven't seen any growing citizen opposition. I haven't even been able to find somebody that knows what the hell ethanol is. Just go out, you know, when you go to work tomorrow, just look at your fellow co-worker and say, what do you know about ethanol? I think he'll say, oh, it's something made out of corn, huh? You know, if you ask the guy, well, how much is produced in the United States, and what's its octane efficiency, and what's it used for, and how much does it cost to produce, and is it good for your car or bad for it? I don't think the guy would know whether it was daylight or dark. So when I see these news articles come across here, so the question arises, how can this fraud continue against growing citizen opposition? There's no citizen opposition to ethanol. So the answer can be simplified, although the scandal is complex with many permutations. First, wholesale corruption within certain state political institutions. Now, the reason that we have this corruption, follow the money. Archer Daniel Midland bribes congressmen like Roy Blunt to create bills in Congress to put this kind of legislation on the books so that we can sell ethanol as a fuel additive in place of MTBE. I don't say that MTBE is better than ethanol. I'm not complaining about MTBE or ethanol. I mean, after all, it appears to me that we Americans are hell-bent for leather to create $5 a gallon gas. Now, when it gets up to $5 a gallon, most of you people out there are going to be driving less than you are today. But that would be my observation. To de facto control of key farm organizations' apparatus, more corruption of the trade associations and farmer co-ops. Enormous political influence within the USDA and other federal-level agencies administering program subsidies of interest, and numerous legislative toadies in the Senate and House who have been corrupted over the years by lavish campaign contributions, and five, intimidation within the media, using levers derived from the media subjugation and large-scale holdings in major media markets. For instance, have you noticed that the Lehrer NewsHour is sponsored by Archer Daniels Midland? Do you think there's ever going to be on the Lehrer NewsHour on PBS a story about the fraud, bribery, and corruption going on with legislation concerning ethanol and ADM? Do you believe that? I mean, come on, boys and girls, let's grow up and get real. So Jim Lehrer's not going to say anything negative about ethanol. And so you can expect more of it. But listen, we're going to have to cut it off. We'll be back tomorrow night. We'll take up the New York Board of Trade to inaugurate sugar-derived ethanol future contracts and options. And I'll show you what the efficiency of these alternative fuels are and whether or not there's enough of these alternative fuels out there to actually fuel America. Could we actually become energy independent? You know, these politically incorrect opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. So don't blame them on the network or on the local radio stations or the advertisers or the sponsor staff or management of the network or of this radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, just go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Well, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and Law Hour, just go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement only. The Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. Hey, there's the signal. Says my time's up. I can leave it right there. We'll take it up right here next time. Same time, same station. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friend.